Over my time of preaching, I have learned several things. God always has zingers ahead of us. You know, there's always, you think you have it figured out, and then God just throws something else into the puzzle and changes it. You know, I thought I knew how God works in the world for a while, and then something changes, and I go, I didn't see that. Oh, wait, I didn't see that either. You know, the biblical account of God's working in the world just leads you all kinds of different directions. You know, you just really can't nail God down to what God will do. And I think that's still the case today in our lives. We just can't nail God down to what God will do. When people say, oh, God doesn't do that, that's just the reason I think that God's going to do it, just to say, I can do what I want. The biblical story is full of water, which seems strange to me because here are a people who live functionally the same kind of place that we live, a desert. And there was a river going through it, that's the Jordan, which you see a picture of it there. It's not a really big one. It's not like saying the Colorado or the Mississippi or, you know, like a big deal. It's just kind of this meandering, somewhat salty river that pierces the land of Israel. But the water stuff goes on even greater than that. When you open the Bible itself, you only get two verses in there, and you find out that God is over the waters of creation at the very beginning. Wind upon the water. Before anything is even brought forth, water is introduced as this primordial thing that God uses to create all things. And we can just list and go down it. You know, God creates the world, separates the light and darkness, water and land. We have Moses going back to, who is rescued by being put in the Nile as an infant, and then later he splits the Red Sea, he goes across, you know, and then his follower Joshua goes and crosses the Jordan. We have all of these things going on. And then we get to Naaman. And the Naaman story to me is really interesting. One, Naaman is a conqueror. He's like the head general for an opposing force against Israel. A group that is so strong that they can just send the head general into Israel and not worry about anything happening to him. You know, let's kill the general. He's the one who causes all our problems. No, we better not do that because the whole group, the whole nation will come upon us. So Naaman has this problem. He has leprosy. The Bible doesn't ever really describe what leprosy is, a skin disease. So we can think of the people who were on Maui who had this really debilitating leprosy, and it can be as just as much as you have a blotch on your skin. And any time anyone had any kind of skin ailment, in ancient cultures they had to live apart. And so this man who has risen all the way to the top of the army of Aram must have been a heck of a guy to overcome the social stigma that was a part of his life. So he happens to have a nice slave girl there who was brought in from a raid, you know, something for the little woman at home. Just give her, well, how about another servant? I got one out there. Julie's shaking her head. She doesn't like that at all. I don't like slavery at all either. So this girl comes in and says, you know, it's too bad Naaman doesn't live in Israel because, man, we got someone who could just handle this right off the bat. He goes, what's this about? And he goes, well, you know, there's a prophet in Israel who can handle it. So he goes to his boss, the king, and says, you know, I've been told by a servant girl that there's a prophet in Israel who can handle my problem. He says, go ahead. And then he loads him up with a lot of goods, thousands of talents of silver, all of this gold, and 20 clothing, changes of clothes. It must have been a big fashion show or something. So they all loads up the entourage and heads off with a letter of introduction to the king. And the king goes, whoa, something big's happening. For one, they're showing up with a lot of goods, all right? What's this about? He reads the letter and he goes, wow. Is this a trap? There is no way that I can change this at all. And so he symbolically rents his clothes. He takes them and he tears them. And that seems like a strange thing for us, you know, today. But, you know, that was in the ancient world, if something came upon you that was way beyond your capacity to deal with, you tore your garment as a way of showing, this is way beyond us. This is way beyond my capacity to deal with. It was a way of basically humbling yourself before the person who was in power before you. If you read the Old Testament, you'll see that this happens occasionally, sometimes in the very presence of God, where the person who has encountered God tears their clothes because they're overwhelmed with the power and the majesty of God. But in this case, the power and majesty of this person. And in fact, at the very end, he says, whoa, I think he's picking a fight with us. The news comes out, and the prophet hears about this, and he says, just send him down to my house. So the whole entourage goes down to Elisha's place. Elisha, sitting there on the couch watching TV, just sends out his servant and says, okay, you go tell this guy what he needs to do. Just tell him he's got to go down to the river and bob up and down 7 times. He'll be great. Okay. The servant goes out and tells it. Naaman is mad. Who has he just seen? The king. The king gave him time. And this prophet who's living in this hut in South Pomona says, send someone out there and, you know, do your thing and, yeah, it'll all be good. Man, he was mad. So mad, he was ready to take all of his goods and head back home, saying, I could have done this. I lived by the Damascus by the river. I could have gotten in the river anytime. In fact, I've been in the river. And then luckily, you know, it's interesting is that his servant comes up and is in the most pious way he can and says, Father, looking up to him, saying, if it was a great act, if you wanted to do a great act, no problem. You would have done something really great. Why not give it a shot? Why not just try going down to the river? He calms him down just enough. He says, why not? We'll give it a shot. I've come this far. It's not going to hurt me. Goes down the river. Ta-da! Fixed! The story goes on from there, though. He gets up, and he marches back to the prophet, who this time comes out of the house. He says, you're looking pretty good there, Naaman. Looks like it worked for you. He says, is there something I can give you? I got all those goods. I got all of this stuff. What would you like? I'll dump it all at your doorstep. And the prophet says, I don't need any of this stuff. I got plenty of what I got need. And so Naaman goes, you sure? To the poor or something? No. Just take it all home and be good. Be good. Naaman also says, now I know that there's a God down here. And he takes off with his entourage and heads back to Aram. Well, the prophet goes back to sitting on his couch and watching TV. But his servant says, man, we could use this stuff down here. There's poor around us. We could divide this. We could get it out there. It would really make a difference. Things aren't easy in Israel. So without telling the boss, he takes off and catches him up the road and says, whoa, sorry, we reconsidered, please give us just a little bit of something so we can share it with the poor. Naaman is happy to do it. He says, fine, great. Well, I brought it all for anyway. Take as much as you want. So he takes some of it. He hides the goods. He walks back in. Elisha looks up on a commercial and says, where have you been? Nowhere. He says, no, my spirit went with you. I saw what you did. And in fact, surprise, the leprosy he has is yours now. And immediately, the servant is covered white with leprosy. God has surprising answers for things. The greed of this passage, it has this click ending in which the servant who tried to pull a fast one in God's name, you got to remember that, gets it at the end. I've thought of a lot about water this last week because of this episode in the Jordan. And I think I was thinking about surprise endings that involved water in the Bible. The Genesis passage at the very beginning, the surprise ending is that God creates all of this stuff, starting with primordial water, and he causes the world to rest. We get the story of Jonah thrown overboard into God's primordial sea when it's all foaming and everything, and it is taken up in the fish, and then instead of just dying, he's spit up on in front of Nineveh and has to go and tell the people all the things he doesn't want to say. And then it gets mad because the people do all the things he said for them to do. And then God at the end goes, see, you know, I care more about those people, and you just care about a few little things that you can deal with yourself. And then we keep jumping forward in the story with water encountered. Remember, Jesus sits at a well, can't get the water. This woman comes up, who he shouldn't be talking to at all, and says, you know, I'd really like a drink. And she knows that she shouldn't talk to him. She says, I'm a Samaritan. I shouldn't talk to you. And you know, this is our well, but you Israelites don't like us, even though Abraham gave us this well. We shouldn't be talking to you. And Jesus says, there's water enough for all of us, isn't there? And brings about a kind of reconciliation. Water for a lot of us in the Bible has a reconciling aspect to it. People who have been baptized have remember that reconciling aspect. And we talk even in John's baptism in the Jordan River where Jesus comes out, that you have this idea of where God is moving in the midst and reconciling us to God's self. And then people who have been baptized, that's the point of it, is that everything that's gone on before you has been washed away. You were reconciled to God. You were one with the creator of the universe, one with the master of the waters, one with the one who counts you as beloved. It's amazing that miracles happen in so many different ways in the Bible, and miracles happen in our lives in so many different ways. In the ways that we think that God should act, God seems to not act that way. In the ways that we least expect it, God shows up on the scene, transforming us in ways that we hadn't thought we would encounter. Sometimes we're just waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting for action. And the moment we have totally given up and gone to do something else, there it happens. I turned around, the lights were on, I saw myself in a new way. God entered the room. It can happen. It can happen in ways we least expect. It can happen to people who are outside even the circle of God's own love, it seems like. Naaman, the woman at the well, even Elijah, it happens with him. That even a person on the inside at times is surprised by the action of God. All of these things. When Elijah, the character, the prophet of this story, was the disciple of Elijah, who's in the Old Testament is the premier prophet. In the story of the Transfiguration, where Jesus goes up the mountain, and you meet Moses, and you meet Elijah, and they talk with one another. So Elijah is the premier prophet of the Old Testament, and when he's going to be taken up to God, he's taken up in a chariot to heaven, and he's trying to get rid of Elisha, because he doesn't want him around. And Elisha keeps following and following and following, and finally he sees the event. You know, they're about ready to give up, and it happens. And he says, and Elisha goes up into heaven, and all that's left of Elijah is his staff and his cloak. They come off as he gets in the chariot and zooms up to God. And Elijah is standing there by the river Jordan, and he picks him up. And he takes the staff and he says, if the God of Israel, the God of Elijah is mine. And he puts his staff in the water and it splits. And he walks across the Jordan on dry land. Kind of similar to Joshua, you know, doing the same thing. So Elijah understands the power of water. He understands the ability that God has to work with people in unrealistic or in situations that don't make sense. Our task at times may be to see God working in situations that don't make sense. See God working in things that are kind of dissident to us. Not easy to see, but God is working in those places. This last week, it rained. On Thursday, it rained in Cape Town, South Africa. First time it has really rained, any measurable rain, in 2 years. I don't know if you've been following international news. They've been on a water shortage crisis. Cape Town has won a lot of international awards for their water use of water. For a large city, they use water more effectively than we do, by far, in Southern California. But because they only have one water source, a dam that's north of the place, and because it hasn't rained in 3 years, guess what? No water. And so when I was reading this in the BBC website, they were talking about how everyone left their house and walked out in the street, and in any place they could, under eaves of water, they put buckets and stuff. And it was the first time in a long time that people had watered flowers and had seen something that the dust had been washed off the world that they were in. It was a miracle. That's how they treated it. It's a miracle. It was common rain. It was supposed to rain this coming week. It may not. It may be a miracle. It may rain. But water has that transforming power. To see things move in ways that it hadn't. Especially for us who are looking for it, you know. For people who aren't looking for it, it's a dreary day of rain. For people who haven't seen it in 2 years, it's a miracle. Miracles are around the corner. You may find one this week. Let's pray together. The miracle's around the corner. May our eyes be open to it. May it fashion us and change us and transform us into the clean people that we are. That we may see the water of your love running through our lives and through the lives of people we know and love. May we be transformed by the renewing of our minds. May we see the women at the well and ask for a cup. May we bring reconciliation and hope. May we see your action, O God. Amen.